Welcome to the Tuck Shop Podcast. I'm Matt Cernell, recording live here on the University of Pittsburgh at Johnstown campus, as I usually try to do, and I can. David Janicek's very kind to come and stop by and talk to us a little bit about everything going on. David, I happen to notice here that this is like a preview warning for we've got to start living a better life. Your office is very warm.
Because we're warm-hearted.
We're warm-hearted. Is that what it is?
Yeah. You can only control that and contain that for so long. But I want to thank you for so kind to have me on again back here.
No, glad to have you. Got some cool things coming up. Why don't you run through the calendar and we can make sure people know how to get a hold of us.
Yeah, a couple of things. I'm going to kind of two-part this, and the second part kind of lead into one of the points I want to make today. So coming up in May, we talked about it before. I'm just going to run through it real quick. Our alumni golf classic is back after taking a year hiatus. We got a deadline on May 23rd. That golf outing is May 31st at Wimber. You can register at www.upj.pitt.edu/alumni golf. Say if you want to golf, you can register there to golf. Say you want to do a sponsorship, you can register there as a sponsorship. Say you just want to come to dinner, you can register for dinner. Say that you're a very proud alum and you'd like to let people know and you want to buy a tee sign. You can do that there. So that's on May 31st. I'm going to mention again, that's kind of kicking off or kind of bookending the starting of our Greek alumni all reunion, which is the 31st until June 2nd. Same thing. You can go to that website to register, see all the information. It's an overnight, Friday, Saturday, and you leave Sunday. www.upjgreeks.org/all-greek-reunion-2024. Also, as I always remind you, if you don't want to type in all the dashes, the dots, and the slashes, check out our Facebook page or our LinkedIn page has all that information.
I'll have both of those linked down below in the description of this podcast.
Cool.
For you to click on and get you right to those pages.
Fantastic. I also wanted to talk about a couple of things we've got coming up a little bit further, and this is kind of like where my my plea is coming in. So we've got coming up, we've been meeting with business and enterprise folks here to do a reunion October 25th, 26th, I believe. It's a Friday, Saturday. There's no overnight accommodations, but there's some pretty neat ideas that are percolating. We're also planning on doing something with social sciences around September, working again with the education department to do some sort of programming that'll be alumni interest. But the big thing is, you know, if we don't know where you are, we can't send you the invitations. And it's real simple. We've gone very much to cut cost to as much electronic stuff as we can. Addresses are good. But if we don't have, I'll get a lot of, I'll get an alumni here and there to say, I don't get anything anymore. I don't receive any of your information. And I'll ask them, well, have you updated any of your information? And there's kind of just that. There's this silence. Oh, I guess I should update my information, right? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I'm going to make that real easy for you. Just go to, I believe it's alumni.pitt.edu/update. And that'll get you back into the system. And that way we can make sure you're getting, the invitation and stuff, but I mean, there's a lot of neat stuff going on. Sometimes we're looking to solicit people. We're not soliciting, even on the money end, but it's more soliciting for ideas, soliciting for guests for this podcast, soliciting for, businesses of the week, alumni features, alumni spotlights. Having an email is just, is one way to get back and forth so that everybody knows. The worst thing we always hear is that phrase, man, I wish I'd have known about that. If we don't know where to tell you, we can't tell you. And if we can't tell you, then you don't know. So update that information, and we'll hope to see you at one of the events that we got coming up either in the very near future or over the next several months. So a lot of good things going on here.
I think it's just a great calendar of events, and we have one or two things that we can't quite talk about yet that I'm hoping that by next Wednesday when we launch the next episode, we'll have to share. But any of these events are great. The reunion, for Greek reunion, is going to be fantastic. That group has done a lot of work putting their schedule together and trying to reconnect all the Greek organizations. And one thing that I wanted to stress is from the golf side of things as well is the idea that profit raised goes to help support the alumni and scholarships. A couple weeks back, we talked to two young students who are both mm-hmm. received alumni scholarships, so you can actually hear in their words what that means to them. And that's where this goes. That's why we do these types of events and to make sure that we can give as much as we can to those students. The Alumni Association as well is currently running, and this one is definitely going to have to direct you to the social media page. Well, no, I can actually put it in the link down below, too. It's going to be a very lengthy description on this podcast. But until the end of April, you can vote for the incoming new or returning members of the alumni board.
Correct.
We are a voted on organization. You may not often think of it that way, but it is. So if you are a graduate of UPJ or attended here when it was a two-year organization, a two-year program that moved on, if you did the 2 years here, you also are an alumni of UPJ. Just Correct. Like when we talked a couple weeks back with Don Freeberg.
Correct.
Don is an alum of UPJ, even though he finished his degree
in Oakland.
So take a look at that. We have some great folks, both new and returning, who would be worthy of your consideration as well.
Absolutely.
We had a really fun one today, David. Speaking about people who are part of our alumni that were here when we were only a two-year program. About in August of 2021, I was approached to help put together a project that for somebody that at the time I didn't know was an alum. The local chapter, the Air and Space Forces, wanted to do a little bit of a documentary on their efforts and to what they do as a chapter and what they do to remember and honor their namesake, Buzz Wagner. For those of you who don't know, and actually I pulled this out from your bookcase.
That's fine.
Well, yeah, you didn't know.
Put it back.
I'll put it back. This is The Evolution of a College by Dr. Hunter. Long time.
It is a very interesting read.
It's a very good read as well.
And I've got copies here if somebody was so inclined to really want to receive one.
All the way through, I think it ends about 1990-ish, mid-90s.
Yeah.
But starting in the early part of the book, Dr. Hunter writes the following paragraphs. On December 12th, 1941, less than a week after the attack on Pearl Harbor, a time when most of the newscasts were still assessing the casualties and military damages in Hawaii, one uplifting news story came out of Lieutenant General Douglas MacArthur's headquarters in the Philippines. The story told of a young American airman, Lieutenant Boyd D. Wagner, who had dueled with Japanese Air Force on Luzon Island. Wagner was cited by the general for having shot down two Japanese fighter planes, following which he strafed 12 other planes on the ground, destroying five of them. The news item was especially meaningful to Johnstown area residents, for young Buzz Wagner was a graduate of Nantyglo High School and attended the Johnstown Center of the University of Pittsburgh for 2 years as an engineering major. So through this process, I found that Buzz is a member of our alumni association, just like everyone who has appeared on
sure.
the show.
Yep.
Documentary finally is done. We premiered it here on campus. The Air Force Association was kind enough to want to and asked to premiere it here on campus. You wanted to jump in?
That documentary, again, you know, I'll make it real easy for you, on our Facebook page, that documentary is there.
Yes.
So if it's,
and I will link to the chapter 20 page.
20-minute, 30-minute documentary?
It's 40 minutes 40 and there's minute. A 15-minute version.
Okay.
A little more focused on the chapter, but there's both versions available at the webpage. But it's a little hard for us to talk to Buzz
More than a
since
podcast.
He lost his life in a crash in Florida over 80 years ago now. But I was reached out and was very he was very gracious to give us a chunk of time. Colonel Jim Moshkett, former Air Force pilot, currently with Space Force. He's technically their Guardians, who's the name of it. It's kind of interesting because I don't have much experience with the Space Force branch of the military yet. But Jim had a lifelong interest in Buzz Wagner and was actually not only working on a book about it, participated in the documentary, but is the individual that actually found the crash site of Buzz Wagner that was lost after they removed some of the debris and actually was able to locate items from the plane itself, Buzz's watch, his Nanny Glow class ring, and even remains that they they were able to identify and bring back to town and reinter with what they had found originally in Grandview.
There wasn't an alumni, Pete Johnson alumni,
no,
playing
we didn't
on the
have
windshield
alumni,
of, the,
no.
of the plane,
on
maybe.
On the P-40, no. No, but Jim was kind enough to give us a chunk of his time, and I wanted to let everyone listen to that interview.
Cool. It just goes to show you never know what you're going to hear on the tuck shop, which was much like the tuck shop, an actual tuck shop where you kind of walked into the tuck shop and wasn't sure what conversation you were going to have or what you were going to overhear. So I think we're being true to the name of the podcast for sure.
I'm
so
excited.
Great job.
It was a great event, and it was very, very grateful that they wanted to allow me to help and we could help even have the event on campus. But I say we go and listen to Past Me with Jim.
Sounds like a plan.
I'm very thankful today to actually now get to expand on what we were talking about and welcome Colonel Jim Moshkett to the show. Jim, thanks for taking a little bit of your time to talk to me today about both your background as well as your background as far as Buzz Wagner goes.
Oh, you're very welcome, Matt. Thanks for inviting me.
Talk a little bit, just for anyone who may, well, other than me, who would probably be listening, who wouldn't know your background. What is your career background?
Career background, I've been with the Department of the Air Force my entire adult life, basically. I went to the Air Force Academy in 1973, graduated in 1977, and from there went to pilot training. And I was a pilot for 30 years, primarily flew F-4s, F-16s, but I also spent some time in training command. I was a T-38 instructor pilot, a T-6 instructor pilot. Fortunate enough to command twice at the squadron level, once as a group commander and then as an expeditionary wing commander in the desert during Operation Rocky Freedom. I ended my career at Maxwell Air Force Base at the Air Command and Staff College as a vice commandant. And then from there, I retired and was hired to work at the National Security Space Institute in Colorado Springs, which, and the NSSI, as we call it, is basically a school that provides professional continuing education for all the Department of Defense and allied space professionals, not NASA, but the military people that are in the space business. And then along with a lot of the rest of the Air Force people, when the Space Force was created, my organization became part of the Space Force. So technically today I'm a Guardian.
Quite a career. I would be remiss if I didn't dig into that just a little bit. Thinking back to when you first started in the 70s to be able to say you're a Space Force Guardian in 2024, would you have thought about that in any realistic sense?
Absolutely not. I knew from a very early age that I wanted to be a pilot and specifically to be a fighter pilot. And I was very blessed to be able to follow that dream. As a matter of fact, what got me started, I actually remember going up to the Johnstown Airport and watching the Thunderbirds fly as a little kid. And I was sitting on my dad's shoulders and watching the Thunderbirds fly over in their F-100s. And I knew from that moment I was hooked. But as far as did I ever think I'd be part of the Space Force? Absolutely not. I think we're doing a lot of great things in the Space Force today. I think it's absolutely vital for our national defense that that we have a Space Force with a group of folks that are purely devoted to that arena, which is now a warfare arena, which it never was before. And I am very blessed to be a part of the organization that is growing the culture and the future leaders of that force.
It's so exciting to hear that and just see how that has progressed, even in the last, well, it not just recent years, it has been the recent years, and how this is one of those things where you don't, it has that same sight of feeling when you have talked to folks who were around, well, or at least read interviews when we went, when it went from U.S. Army Air Corps to Air Force.
Right. My dad was part of that.
So it's going to be one of those neat things about history that will be part of history for a long time, I'm sure.
Absolutely. We're still having our growing pains, but making a lot of great strides.
Kind of the idea of history opens up. I talked earlier about the concept of Buzz Wagner. What first brought you in and to that interest of that story about Buzz and his background?
It's sort of interesting. It takes me back to really my childhood. My grandparents lived in a house over on the Johnstown, I guess it was called the Johnstown Bypass at the time. It was across from the Flood City Bowman. Some people may remember where that is. I think that's gone now. I'm not sure.
I think so, yeah.
My grandparents had three pictures on the wall, and they were lifelong Democrats, had lived through the Depression, obviously, and they had a great admiration for FDR. So they had FDR's picture on the wall. They had JFK's picture on the wall, and they had Buzz Wagner's picture on the wall in their living room. Those were the three pictures that hung up. And I remember as a little kid sitting there looking at that picture and my grandmother telling me stories about Buzz. And of course, even today, a lot of rumors persist about Buzz, and some of the stories she told me were pretty fantastical, right? One that persists was that, you know, Buzz disappeared in a swamp and was eaten by alligators, you know, and as a little kid, you're just, you know, from Pennsylvania, who'd never even seen an alligator. That just amazed me.
It's imagination fuel.
Exactly. So, but as I grew up and of course got into the flying business, and then eventually when I got to Air University at Maxwell Air Force Base, that is the site of the Air Force Historical Research Agency. And they have files there on, oh, different Air Force units and Air Force figures from the past. And so one day I had a free moment and I just walked over to the Historical Research Agency and thought I'd see what they had on Buzz. And I was shocked to realize they had one folder, and in the folder was an article from Life magazine. There was just a few odds and ends and a couple of newspaper clippings, and that's all they had. And I thought that was quite a tragedy for the first Army Air Force ace of World War II to have so little recognition in the Air Force. And then, I realized that a lot of people in today's Air Force didn't even know anything about Buzz. And so that piqued my interest and really got me going in my later life about trying to tell his story.
And that effort took you to effectively the very spot where Buzz lost his life.
It did.
How did that process come about, where you decided, I've done enough research, and I'm now going to venture into the field? Because there's a big, especially with being a show about alumni and UPJ, the idea of doing research is not foreign to anybody, as a, you know, in a college, but going actually out to explore, what was that like?
Well, in my active duty time, I was a trained Air Force accident investigator. I investigated two Air Force Class A mishaps. One was a T-6 and another one was a T-38 crash. Fortunately, all the pilots survived in those. But so I was trained in aircraft and accident investigation. And one of the things I learned through my research on the internet and the Historical Research Agency, and I've been to the Air Force Museum at Wright-Patterson. I've been to the Smithsonian. I've been to the Library of Congress and doing research there. One of the things I learned was that the Army never really explained why Buzz disappeared and why his airplane crashed, which is a very odd thing. But when you think about World War II, there were absolutely thousands of airplane crashes. Now, I'm going to get this wrong. Somebody's going to critique me, but I think there were like 15,000 aircraft crashes during World War II, during training here in the United States. So it's not surprising. I think there were like 35 Army Air Force pilot aircraft that were lost on the day Buzz crashed.
Oh, my.
So, I mean, there were airplanes going down all over the United States. But at the time of Buzz's disappearance, the search that went on for him across the United States was greater than the search for Amelia Earhart. As a matter of fact, it was probably at the time the greatest search for any missing airplane at the time. So I thought, with my background and realizing that the Army had never explained why Buzz crashed, how he disappeared, I thought if I could find his crash site, I might be able to find something that indicated why he disappeared and died on that particular day. So it started my search. So I got the World War II accident report, which is available. And from that report, I narrowed it down by a 10 by 10 area, 10 miles by 10 miles. So that's 100 square miles. And I thought I would just start driving down to see if I could find it. So my wife joined me, and we drove down from Montgomery, Alabama to Eglin, Florida, about, once every 3 weeks or so, and began to just roam around the countryside. And a lot of this was on the Eglin Range Complex, which the part I was on was open to the public. But we just started looking in that particular area, and we'd pick 1 square mile area and we'd look, and then we'd look in another. And also as part of that, what I would do is I'd go to local restaurants and cafes and coffee shops, and I'd look for some old guy, and I'd saddle up next to him and say, "Hey, do you know anything about this?" Unfortunately, of course, Florida has had a lot of movement, a lot of people incoming over the years. But eventually I did find an old timer that knew where the crash was. I think he was 12 years old at the time, and he kind of helped me narrow that down. So that's how we started looking in that area. Surprisingly, I actually contacted the historian at Eglin Air Force Base, and he knew nothing about this at all. So even it was unknown to the people at the base.
That's having spent so long working on this project, and having you were very gracious with your time when we did the preliminary video recording for the movie. That actually the link will be down below in the description for anyone who's wants to see the whole 40 plus minutes of it. That even from the Pitt perspective, being an alum of what was then Johnstown College of the University of Pittsburgh, and I think I even sent you at that point the copy of the book or a couple pictures from the history book. It was two paragraphs.
Right.
Maybe, and I found two articles in the paper, in the student paper, in the Pitt paper, and that was it. It seems like,
right.
And your explanation makes perfect sense. A lot of history was happening at that time.
Right.
And what would you say was that? What was occurring for people who don't have that perspective that makes Buzz's story so important, especially at the time it happened and what he did for while he was a pilot?
Okay. Well, I think in particular for the people of Johnstown, a lot of hardworking blue collar folks, the steel mills, the coal mines, a lot of immigrants, Buzz's exploits during World War II certainly gave them a sense of pride in their community that somebody from their hometown could accomplish so many things. From a professional standpoint, Buzz was a very, very young pilot. He was a first lieutenant, and they made him a squadron commander at that time in the Philippines as a first lieutenant. He was recognized as a very professional, capable pilot. So most commanders at that time were majors, and the Air Force was expanding very rapidly, and they needed somebody to lead, and Buzz was that kind of leader. He actually stepped forward and just did so many amazing things as a young officer. one of the young enlisted men that worked for him, I interviewed him not long ago, and he was surprised to learn that Buzz was not a West Point graduate. He said Buzz just carried himself with such professionalism and dignity and sort of pizzazz, if you will, that he just assumed Buzz was a West Point grad. But, you know, the Japanese just flooded across the Pacific. I mean, they bombed Pearl Harbor. They took Java. They took the Philippines. They took Indochina. They were threatening Australia. They were bombing Australia. And there was really a threat that the Japanese were going to invade Australia. And the Americans were not having very much success. And of course, in the very first days of World War II, Buzz shot down 5 airplanes to become the first ace. So in that way, he proved the Japanese weren't invincible. And he really stood out to the American public for that reason. And then after he evacuated back to the Philippines, he led a fighter squadron on their first sweep over Ley Airfield in New Guinea and shot down another 3. But on that particular day, those 3 airplanes were Japanese Zeros, which were probably the best airplane in the Pacific at the time. And Buzz was flying a P-39, which was absolutely not a great airplane. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was capable, but it wasn't great. And so, again, on that mission, Buzz proved that his airmanship put him head and shoulders above everyone else. So with 8 kills to his credit in April of 1942, Buzz was by far the highest ranking American ace in that theater of war.
I think the fascinating part about this whole thing is that story in the right combination of time and place becomes what your work has been able to start building towards a well-known national story of part of American history that you've almost rediscovered in a lot of ways. Did that ever cross your mind that you've talked about the examples of here's a file folder with 2 or 3 things in it, that now that file folder is much bigger because of the work you've done?
That has crossed my mind, Matt. And you know, I'm very, I would just say I'm honored to try to bring that story forward, especially because so many people in my service when I was on active duty, the Air Force, had never even heard of Buzz. You know, his exploits were just incredible for such a young pilot. And so I'm just pleased to be a part of that and bring that forward. So many people now know a little bit more about the story. And of course, I'm not done yet. My intent when I started the research was initially to write a magazine article. And of course, there have been some magazine articles written about Buzz. But so many of them still include so many inaccuracies. They tell the same incorrect story over mm-hmm. and over again. So once I really started doing the research and I met so many people and I've interviewed so many people that actually knew Buzz, I thought his story was worth telling. Now, his exploits in the Philippines have been pretty well covered in a lot of books. I think when I eventually tell his story, it's going to be more about his biography and about my quest to really to tell his story. Why he crashed on that fateful day, how he got to where he was in the Philippines, how he made his way back to the Philippines. And, you know, he really was kind of a humble guy, too. A lot of people think that maybe he was a glory hound, and he certainly wasn't that. I would say he was really humble and almost a little bit shy about what he did. So he probably didn't tell his own story very much.
So he'd be very mortified by this video.
He might be. He certainly shied away from the press, you know, and of course, he was hounded by the press quite a bit. I mean, there were pictures of him almost in every magazine. There were comic books done about him. There were bubblegum playing cards that have his image on them. You know, he was in Life magazine and Look magazine. You know, he was, as a matter of fact, and I think I mentioned this to you before, at the time of his death, they were actually, I think it was, I'm on the spot now, and I'm not going to be able to think about, one of the big motion picture theaters in Hollywood was making a movie about his life. And they were going to call it the Pittsburgh Pirate Pilot, the Pittsburgh Pilot. And of course, his family corrected that. The Buzz had a copy of the screenplay and was reviewing it. And at the time of his death, that screenplay disappeared. And they pretty much speculate that it was in the airplane with him. He had taken it with him to look at it in his free time. Because when they eventually found the airplane in January of 1942, there were papers fluttering all around the crash site. And of course, they had been weathered by the weather. And so when that screenplay disappeared, my understanding is the movie company put the money into the movie Flying Tigers with John Wayne.
Oh,
So
wow.
Buzz's movie never got made.
But we got Flying Tigers.
Yeah, we got Flying Tigers.
That is a very interesting little piece of movie history.
Yeah.
I've been very thankful for this project and Jim, both for your time to participate in the production of the movie part and as well as joining us and telling that and in your story and how it has brought to light Buzz's story, because it really has been a joy to open up a little piece of our history from the university perspective too. That there's been a, I've been on campus a lot of years, and it's not something that has ever really passed the radar for a lot of people. And even in talking and inviting people to attend the premiere was didn't never never knew that, didn't know that part of the story.
Yeah.
So
Well, what?
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, part of what I'm hoping, Matt, is maybe if somebody hears part of this or sees that, we can unravel maybe part of the mystery as to why Buzz left the university early. I haven't met anybody that really can give me a definitive reason for why he didn't complete his 4-year degree in aeronautical engineering. However, the speculation is for most people that knew him is he knew war clouds were on the horizon. America was a bit, everybody, well, most people knew that America was eventually probably going to get into the war in some form or fashion. And I think Buzz always did want to be a pilot, and he saw that as an opportunity as FDR began to build up the Air Force and get ready for war, that Buzz thought it was time to leave. So he gave up he gave up his academic career to go be a pilot. And I think that's one of the things that made him a good pilot was being an aeronautical engineer. I spoke to a guy, Joe Moore, who was a fellow squadron commander with him in the Philippines, and he said that when they got their new P-40s, Buzz actually went out and glued pieces of yarn to the wings and then took the airplane up and performed and max performed it and then put it into stalls and different things. And he would sit in the cockpit and look out and watch the way the yarn moved on the wings. So he knew exactly when a stall was beginning, when he was maximizing the airplane's performance. So again, I think Buzz's time at Johnstown, there at the university actually probably set him up to be a good pilot.
That's just a really cool part of our history that never until this project, until you talked about that, never has been out there for people to know about. And doing that digging after our first round of interviews, the video interviews for the movie, look through Pitt's records. He did complete the time he could in Johnstown. So he is an alum of Pitt Johnstown. But you're right, didn't finish Pittsburgh.
Right.
Because you couldn't do a 4-year program here until 74, which
Oh,
had
I
been
didn't know that.
well after Buzz's death.
Okay.
But there was nothing in the all those records are gone
Yeah.
from Oakland. Couldn't find
Well, and
anything on that.
that's true for his time in the Philippines too. The Japanese, of course, when the Japanese invaded the Philippines, they burned all the records before the Japanese could get
Sure.
there. So records about Buzz's squadron, his heroics, his medals, things like that, most of that got burned and destroyed. And so that's why there's so little history available other than individual personal histories about people who knew Buzz and others.
If somebody does have something, if they hear it or knows an alum is listening and say, "Oh, my parent or my grandparent knows that or has something," is there a place we can direct them to let you know that you're comfortable sharing?
I actually have an email address set up purely for research, and that is buzzresearch@aol.com. So buzzresearch, all one word, easy to remember, at aol.com. And I'm probably one of the few guys, less maybe 5 guys in the world that have AOL, but
Oddly enough, your two of them I know, and they're all Air Force. Both of you are Air Force. So
yeah, we know what we like. I guess
that's the, hey, if it works. I've spent enough time around all of the Air Force veterans and the association in the last 3 years. If it works and it's solid, I understand. Because if you're in an airplane, you want it to work and you want it to be solid. So
that's exactly right.
So if anyone finds anything or knows something, please reach out. Jim, I want to thank you for taking almost over 20 minutes with us here today and telling your part of this story and how it's added and kind of getting all of us to know Buzz a little bit better as one of our alum.
Yeah, my pleasure, Matt. Thank you so much for having me.
The Tuck Shop podcast is recorded live on the University of Pittsburgh at Johnstown campus. Update your contact information with us by visiting johnstown.pitt.edu/alumni. Connect with us online via Facebook and LinkedIn, or consider donating to the university at giveto.pitt.edu/giveupj.
This has been a production of Quantum Wave Media. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the opinion of the University of Pittsburgh at Johnstown.